Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Good. I'm never sure with this online conferencing tech. Normally, I like to do this face-to-face, but with the quarantine and all.
No problem, sir. I'm sure once you hear my pitch, you'll see it's dynamite.
Okay. Are you sure your mic is okay?
Yes, sir. My techno gadget is the newest craze. Why?
You just sound like some 1950s commercial.
No, sir. That's just how I talk.
I see. So what's this pitch, Mr.
Plastic. Charles Plastic. Well, sir, you see, I got some really swell ninja and dinosaur costumes, along with a great church location and a guy that looks like a no-good old pimp.
Where's the pitch?
Well, you see, the dinosaur's like a holy warrior from the church. He's fighting the ninjas.
Why would that happen?
You see, the ninjas are run by a Shaolin monk who's trying to run a drug trade.
Okay, I gotta stop you right there. The strangeness aside, we can't have a Shaolin monk selling drugs. It will get us in trouble with,
Alrighty, then we'll make him a Catholic priest.
Exactly how does that improve the situation?
Well, what if I told you the dinosaur's like a werewolf, but instead of turning into a wolf, the holy warrior becomes a velociraptor?
I think that I've heard enough.
Oh, and I've got some really swell costumes and equipment to film a great Vietnam War scene.
Okay, that really is enough. I will pass. Maybe next time. Have an idea first before just taking a bunch of disparate things, throwing them into a blender, and hitting puree.
Alrighty, sir, thank you. Maybe if I had a revenge angle and a flaming car explosion effect, then they'll take it serious.
Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 144, The Velocipastor.
April Fool's, Sicky. We're back, and somehow we're more on schedule now because of COVID. So, I guess, yay?
We've got nothing to do. What else are we going to do?
Yeah, so, but a good, nice April Fool's treat. All this month on Sci-Fi Malady, we're going to be doing April Fool's, the films that were made that, in all sincerity, the creators probably thought they were actually making something great. At least at one point they thought that, and then it just fell apart. And so we're going to be starting off today with Velocipastor, but as an extra special treat, we got the good folks from the Lunatic Parade. So today we're not just Sci-Fi Malady. We are the Raving Lunatic Parade once again.
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah!
How we doing, guys?
Surviving as best we can in this lockdown COVID world.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I was going into my office like 2 days a week before. Now I just don't. We've been doing that since, I think, the beginning of March. They just, my company was like, everybody just work from home. So I've been accustomed to it, but it's like, it's still, you know, you miss being able to, hey, we're going to go see my mom, or we're going to go grab a bite to eat or see a movie. Like, it's a little weird, but, you know, it's funny because, like, whenever I was before the lockdown, I was constantly telling myself I don't have enough time to do all the things I want to do, like write and all that kind of stuff. And now that I'm on lockdown, I seem to do nothing but watch terrible movies and play video games.
Yep. Well, I've been catching up on Clone Wars.
Nice.
So that, and after that, I think I'm going to watch, I think season 3 of Castlevania is out.
That did drop, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check that out. And I want to check out My Hero Academia. I keep hearing awesome things about it. So, and since I'm a comic book fan, I've heard that actually does a better job with comic book heroes than American comics, which I somehow believe. So,
yeah.
I'll be the judge of that. That sounds good.
So, but I think it's on Netflix. What's that?
I said, it turns out that I'm essential. I'm still working because everybody needs a weight bench right now.
I'm also essential, so I'm at least enjoying the less traffic on the way to work.
It's funny. It's funny you mentioned everybody needing a weight bench. I have ordered in a whole bunch of home gym equipment in the last 2 weeks, and it just is getting delivered every other day. So I'm that guy ordering all that stuff that's being delivered right now.
I probably sent it to you.
He
redid his garage floor.
Yeah. Yes, I did, because, you know, I'm going to be out in the garage a lot more. It now makes sense for it to be nicely epoxied and covered instead of dusty, crappy concrete.
I'm shocked you did not somehow epoxy yourself to the concrete, but hey.
What I'm shocked is that it actually came out decent. I'm not going to say it came out perfect, because there's a couple spots that I somehow missed, just very little spots, but it actually came out okay. With my lack of knowledge on how to do stuff, I was impressed. I figured it would be just a nightmare. Now, I did accidentally clear coat part of the driveway, but that's another story.
I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, it looks exactly like what you'd expect, that it spilt out of the bucket while I was moving it, and it just left on the driveway.
I'm kind of shocked you only epoxied part of the driveway, too.
That's true. I would have seen Scott doing the entire driveway and then going, huh, why did I do that?
Let's be honest. You guys were expecting...
Why did I epoxy the yard?
Well, I don't have to mow the lawn anymore.
Let's be honest. You guys were expecting that I would do half of the garage and then stop like I did with the kitchen when I scraped half the wallpaper off and left that hideous purple paint and it half wallpapered for 2.5 years because I was just like, I'm done with this part of the project.
The only reason that got done is because Sarah. Let's just be honest.
Had Sarah not moved in, the kitchen would still have half of the wallpaper up and be half painted in 20-year-old pastel purple, where I just decided the one day I'm like, yeah, F it, I'm done with this and I'm not working on it anymore. There would probably also be a collection of Mountain Dew cans and random stuff sitting on the floor that had just been there for like 2.5 years at that point, too.
Dude, there was that random Mountain Dew can sitting on that floor for over 2 years. Seriously. Every time. Still there.
It was a decoration.
Really? How did I miss that? Wow. Is it still there, Scott?
No. It's long gone. No. Sarah took care of that.
Oh, that's true.
Whipped him in shape.
Well, before we do the review, one of the things that I got to do is whenever we have the Lunatic Parade folks on, I've got to add my 2 cents to one of their previous episodes.
Here it comes.
Look, when I listen to it at a cleaning job. And I'll be in the middle of like vacuuming a floor and being like, no, man. And I'll just kind of jump in. I think when someone walked in on me talking to a bookshelf, as though like you guys were right there. So I was like, okay. So first of all, Trent, I went and I looked at the Disney Edge of Empire or whatever it is, the new Star Wars RPG from Fantasy Flight. Now, wow, yeah. That's a low that I didn't think possible.
Yep.
To make people pay another $60 just to get a handful of classes.
Yep.
Yep.
And the same set of rules. You know what I mean? It's like you basically have to rebuy the rule set over and over and over again if you want to get all of the additional classes for the game instead of selling them as supplements. Like, that's just ridiculous, man. That's like ultimate, like, capitalization of a product, man. I mean, from a business perspective, it's genius. But, like, it's one of the more reasons why I hate Disney. I love Disney. Don't be wrong. I want everybody out there, like, I will never stop watching Disney. They get my $12 a month for Disney Plus. They get, I'll go watch every Marvel movie they make. But at the same time, they're also Satan, you know?
Yeah. Well, okay. And here's the thing. I can get happy. What's that?
Sorry, Trent, you can't say you hate them. They'll send a death squad.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, exactly.
Be careful. The mouse will try to get rid of you then.
That'll be dressed up as the Mandalorian.
That's a worthy death, man. I wouldn't mind that.
Man. Like, I think I'd be okay with that. Like,
and that's why they do that. So you could be like, oh man, I am surprisingly okay with this. And that you'll just let me write a note that says, do not prosecute. This is okay. But I get making a supplement. Like, I'm looking at, okay, you guys, the sickies, you can't see this, but this book back from the old D6 line, Heroes and Rogues, it's got like 40 character classes. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. Because they're just non-typical stuff, like an Imperial pilot or, I don't know, a shock box or whatever. But to make you spend another $180 just so you can decide to play a Jedi and a bounty hunter in the same group.
Yeah.
Come on, yeah, guys.
Exactly. And then the fact that they got even worse with, like, you know, like they have like extended supplementals to each of those. So, like, if you want to play a bounty hunter, but you want to play, like, you want all the rule sets for a bounty hunter, you have to buy an additional supplement that's like $35 that has like all the bounty hunter stuff in it. It's just like, are you kidding me? Like, you literally have to buy like three books to play a full, probably four books to buy a full bounty, to play a full bounty hunter, a full Jedi in the same game. Like, that's just insane, you know?
Yeah, no, that's right. And why? And not only that though, don't you have to buy your own special dice for that system?
Yes. Yes. It's a D6 system or a D10 system, but it has these specific force dice that you have to buy. And they had them at Kenmore. And it was like something like $15 or $20 or something like that for a set of five of them. And it's like, you have to, everybody has to have a set of these to be able to play the game, like on top of regular D10s. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. It's like just that.
That's like making you buy three copies of a video game just to keep playing it.
Right.
You know? Well, yeah. You got to do one part, but you got to buy the game again.
And a special controller to play.
And a special controller. Yeah. Although now that we said that, EA's minions are listening and going, why haven't we done that?
Let's see
if we can piss off our community even more.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think we are going to see it. Square Enix is getting ready to release the remake of Final Fantasy VII. And from what I understand, the first game is only part of it. So it's episodic. So you're going to get chunk one, which takes you through all the stuff in Midgar and some other things past it. And then you're going to have to buy another copy to get the next chunk of the game and another copy to get the next chunk of the game. Oh. So I think this is unfortunately a trend we're going to start to see happening.
No. Yeah.
Well, time to bust out your Yahtzee boards, guys.
As long as each game was like $15 instead of $60, it might be worth it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Because if it totals up to the $60, it's like, all right, fine, I could do the installment game. But yeah, you know they're not going to charge that.
Well, I know the first one is $59. Now, I don't know what each additional one is going to be. So it could be something more like for each additional part of the story, it might be coming for free. I don't know yet because they haven't released any details. I just know the game is coming in sections. So I don't know. I'm assuming they're going to be charging for each section.
Well, regardless, a $60 book should net you the core classes that they know everybody wants to play. You want to make up subclasses or some other expansions outward, that's fair. But this is just robbery.
Yeah. That's.
And maybe I can understand some special dice, but even then it's like, you're pushing it.
Well, because it's the same rules. It's not even like with the Rebellion one, if it were like, oh, here's a special set of rules or something for that era, I would still hate it, but at least I'd be thinking, well, I mean, at least they gave you something unique. No, the only thing unique are the few classes.
Right. So if you think about this, if some new gamers that have discovered role-playing games because of they saw it on Stranger Things or they saw, you know, Critical Role, or they saw Joe Manganiello talking about it, like they go there and I'm gonna buy the Star Wars game, and it's like you buy the Force and Destiny one, you literally can only play like four different types of Force using characters. There's no way to play a pilot. There's no way to play a smuggler. There's no way to play, like, you know, just an average, like a mechanic or a technician. None of that. You're like either what are they, like counselors, like Padme?
There's Padawan. I mean,
Yeah, exactly. Like, you basically, like, the cloud, they have, like they say there's 18 total. What do they call? I can't remember what they call them in there, but 18 total classes, but it's not. It's like literally four classes with just a bunch of different options that you choose to make them a little bit different. But it's like, you can't, there's no stats in there. Like, if I want to play Han Solo and you want to play Luke Skywalker, there's no way to make that happen with only buying the one book. Like, can't do it.
Yeah. And this is something I don't know. I don't see other companies doing this.
I don't think so either. This is evil Disney.
Yeah, right. So
this is Disney going, how can we merchandise this thing to the extreme and make as much money as possible out of this thing is exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Which is what they do.
What I see a lot happening now in my mind is crowdsourcing, crowdfunding game products. I mean, like, you've got the new, and this isn't sci-fi really, but you know what? We wanted to change the format, Scott and Thomas, to sci-fi with a minor on horror, right? We talked about that back in the day and after Gulardi Fest.
We did.
Did we agree to that, or did I make that up?
You might have made it up. I know we talked about it.
We did talk about it.
Another one of your fever dreams.
But no, someone else made it. One of the people at Gulardi Fest suggested that to us. But anyway, let's just say that we do that instead of having a discussion now about it. But anyway, so if you look at Vampire the Masquerade, they're on their fifth edition now. The last book that came out, Chicago by Night, was crowdfunded.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it was $35.
Yeah.
$35 for, I mean, here. So, okay, Sickies can't see that, but this is the book. I mean,
yeah,
this is the book. It's like the size of a role play book.
Yeah.
For those of you who can't see the Rage Masters demonstration, just imagine a book. You know, it's kind of rectangular and it's got a binding and it's got pages and there's stuff printed on it.
And it's made of paper.
Yeah,
very helpful.
The cover is kind of thicker than the pages, and you know, it's a different color.
It's 401 colored pages.
And it has letters on there too, Scott.
Yeah.
And the letters are arranged in a certain way to mean something.
But what I'm saying is $35 for 401 pages with colored art. That's better than you're gonna get from Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I've been looking into. Like, Kickstarter is a spectacular source of indie games, and like I've been looking into, like, there's so much cool stuff on there. I just recently saw one that I actually wanted to bring up to you guys. They're doing an Altered Carbon role-playing game that's on Kickstarter right now that looks really freaking cool. I don't know if you guys ever watched, did you watch Altered Carbon at all?
Yes. Reviewed it, in fact.
Yeah,
I think we called it, the episode was called Wearing Our Review on Our Sleeve.
Oh yeah, I have to check that one out, because, like, I literally just started watching it a couple of weeks ago, and it's pretty cool so far, man. I have to admit, like, everything in it, I was like, wow, this is different.
It's messed up.
I literally watched the whole second season in one sitting.
Nice. Stopped.
I was like, I'm not getting tonight. I don't care.
Mm-hmm. It's messed up. I think my favorite scene is where they go to the hospital, and he's got to, like, scan his fingerprints for the money, and he was like, he basically, they're like, well, we have a lot of people, we can't take care of your friend. He's like, I'm rich. Well, they're like, we'll scan your hand on the screen. Instead, he spits on it.
All right, guys.
And it reads DNA, his DNA from the spit. It's great.
Yeah. Follow me here, guys. What do you say we do a Kickstarter thing and a creative collaboration before somebody else jumps on it? The Tiger King role-playing game. Carol Baskin is the big enemy, and you have to survive. You have to survive Carol Baskin trying to steal your business and your land.
That would make a great board game, like a 45-minute or like 1 hour board game.
Yeah, maybe it's not an actual role-playing system. Maybe it's just a board game, the Tiger King game, and you can choose to be Doc Antle. Everyone has different win conditions. Like, Doc Antle has to convince so many 19-year-olds to join his cult and sleep with him. Joe Exotic has to win a race for governor while bribing husbands with meth who aren't gay to be his husband because he offers them meth.
You know what? I started watching that, and I started listening. What was the song? The song was
"Here Kitty Kitty."
Here Kitty Kitty. I saw that. I was like, "Well, I know what I'm YouTubing tomorrow."
That was brilliant. He's walking along to look like a Carol, feeding body parts to tigers.
That's right.
The honest thing about this is people that are kind of choosing sides, where they're like, I'm on team, and I'm like, did we watch the same thing? Because I feel like if you choose a side, you lose. Like, there isn't a decent, like, I'm going to stand my ground with this thing. It's shitty. The whole thing is shit.
I said this to my wife. I'm like, how is Carol any different from them?
Carol's the worst of them all.
All of them are. The only difference is the guy in Myrtle Beach is a cult leader. Joe is just really weird, and Carol's a hippie. That's the only real difference at the end of the day.
Doc Antle, right. Well, Doc Antle is just really a cult. He's brainwashing people.
Oh, yeah. That's Doc.
Joe is finding people who are homeless and without a job and just out of prison and saying, I'll feed you some food off the Walmart expired meat truck and let you live in one of my trailers. And Carol,
what I'm not putting on the pizza.
Right. Some of the best pizza I make from scratch with expired meat and cheese. And Carol is just using her status as a do-gooder to lure hippies to come help her save the tigers, even though she's as bad as any of them. They're horrible, but I do got to say, like, out of the horrible people, if I had to be on someone's team, Joe Exotic might be the best of all three of them.
Yeah.
Jeff Lull is horrible as well. He's putting tiger cubs in luggage and rolling them through casinos.
Hotels.
To bring them up to the room to use them as a prop to have sex with drunk Vegas women.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I think Joe was the only person on there that I saw come to the conclusion that what he was doing, he showed remorse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I believe it was genuine remorse. Like, what I was doing, breeding these tigers, the way I kept them, is wrong. You know what I mean? I didn't see that from anybody else on there. You know, the main players.
Yeah.
The rest of those guys, there were a couple dudes that you see that it did indeed affect them profoundly. But out of the main three people involved, Joe's the only one that seemed like he came around full circle on that.
Yeah, what I've learned from this is if you're a big tiger person, you're one of the worst people alive. Like, oh, okay, here's the other thing that I thought was like the moment where I'm like, Joe, he's at the funeral for Travis. And he talks about that kid putting his balls on his head to make his day better at his funeral with his mom sitting there.
Oh,
come on, Joe.
Yeah, don't forget. Don't forget, he called them his golden nuggets.
They were like golden nuggets for that boy.
I am so glad I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Watch Tiger King.
Yeah. I gotta watch it, Bob.
I think watch Tiger King on Netflix. It'll answer all of your questions.
It starts very, very slow. It starts very slow, but at the end of the first episode, it takes this twist, and you're hooked. You're never going to stop watching. I've watched it 3 times already, the whole documentary, and I'm going to start a fourth.
Wow.
I can't get enough Tiger King.
That's pretty wild, Scott. Pretty wild.
It's
speaking of big...
Symptom 144, Sci-Fi Malady, Tiger King.
Speaking of big animals of a sort... Let's get into our actual review, Velocipaster.
Amazing segue.
So this is, every episode is going to be watching, like I said, a movie or TV program or something that they really meant well, but botched it. And so Velocipaster is about,
Well, let's see. Thomas, you did some bad. Before I give the plot, and yeah, there's a plot. Before I discuss the plot, Thomas, you did some background checking on this way back when. Do you remember what you found?
I believe I found that this was a project that came out of
film school.
Film school. And this guy made a trailer. And he made this trailer, and just because out of the trailer, how amazing the trailer was, he actually then made the actual film.
Yeah, his videos got 45 views on average. This one got 45,000. So he found a friend of his mother's to give him $35,000 to make the movie. And they made this whole movie on $35,000, which, you know, the budget's low at the beginning when it says insert VX effect of car on fire.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Yeah, but hold on. See, that's what I loved. See, that is where that was one of the things I loved about the movie, was that these guys so obviously like were making fun of themselves while making this film. You know what I mean? Like when people die and like the head goes rolling off in the background and it's so blatantly obvious it's a plastic mannequin head. Like they didn't make any attempt to hide the fact that it was the head of a mannequin. You know, like I found that absolutely endearing, because
I like that they were conscious that the dialogue in a film like this has to have those old school touches. Like that lady comes running down there and just gets lambasted by an arrow. And his line was, "Oh, are you hurt?" Like, she's got an arrow jutting out of her chest. Like, that's the kind of thing you did see in old Z-rated movies, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree 100%, man. It totally was an homage to like really terrible 1970s, like those really horrible like late 70s, early 80s, like Asian freaking action films, on top of the fact that it was making fun of those really terrible American like 80s action films where every guy who knew karate fought a ninja. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was hysterical. I mean, there were moments what I loved. I have an absolute like unnatural love of terrible films. Like I do. Like if you set out to make a movie that is intentionally make a bad movie, I have the utmost respect for you, because I grew up loving films from companies like the Blood Species movies and Troma Pictures, like Tromeo and Juliet, Toxic Avenger. And I love whenever they make these films intentionally terrible. So when I saw that, I picked out right off the bat that it was a film school project. And then I had love for it because they embraced the awfulness so wonderfully. Oh, like that they embraced the horribleness of it so well. That as a film, it was horrible. I mean, it was horrible. It ranks slightly below, but all the way down there with Batman v Superman for me. Like, it was awful, dude. Like, it was a terrible, terrible movie.
Yeah, if they're trying to make a good film, I would say it's worse than Star Crash, which is my all-time worst movie. I actually think I did rank something worse than Star Crash, and I don't remember what it was. Was it Planet Earth or something? The Wandering Earth? But they're not trying to make a good movie. Unlike Star Crash, these guys were just trying to make a movie about a priest who can turn into a pastor and gets convinced by a prostitute to use it to fight crime and ninjas. I thought it was amazing. I think
Which is amazing.
Yeah. I thought it was really awesome. Like, I love the twist at the end where the ninjas believe they're doing the work of God by getting everyone addicted to cocaine and leaving them no choice but to join a self-help group, and then they can use that army of faith to dominate the world.
Exactly. It was such a commentary on religion at the same time that I just thought it was fantastic. Like, I mean, the guy had great moments in there, and to be honest with you, like the girl who played the prostitute, she actually had some decent acting chops. Like, her delivery was fantastic. Like, there were moments when she would like mutter something off the cuff, and just like the delivery of that was like beautiful comedic timing. But obviously,
I was gonna say the acting in this is pretty terrible, except for her.
She also has the greatest career path ever. Hooker, doctor, lawyer.
Yes.
I'm glad you said that, because when I first heard that, I'm like, doctor, lawyer, huh? Okay. I mean, why not?
I love that. She's like, there's not much demand for hooker doctor lawyers. Actually, there's probably more demand for that career than any other career in the world. You're never, ever going to be out of a job. One of your three professions is always going to be in demand. Whatever happens to the world, it is COVID-proof. It is recession-proof. It is everything-proof. One of your three careers is always going to be in demand.
You might be using multiple titles at once. You never know. You might have to sue yourself.
In your career path as a hooker, you might have someone who wants you to pretend to be a nurse.
Like, I'm wondering this, if I were Lex Luthor, that's who I would want. Like, whatever I have to pay you, I don't need anybody else. You are all I literally need. You know what I mean?
I can't believe she wasn't recruited by the ninja priest Chinese. Okay, the Chinese Japanese ninja priest.
Yeah,
exactly. Whatever they were, yeah.
Because whenever they were whenever they were in his tent, it was like, oh, it's Chinese, except he's dressed as a priest, and there's ninjas. I really think it's like they just walked into an Asian buffet and said, "Ooh, that's cool, take that."
And I think at some point he was speaking Korean.
Right. And I love the fact that the ninjas were constantly doing like Taekwondo katas, like the whole punching, like with the it's all Taekwondo stuff. You know what I mean? Like, and Kung Fu. And so it has nothing to do with like actual, like what the ninjutsu martial art is. I was like, that's fantastic. And dude, the Vietnam War sequence, come on. I mean, like,
oh my
God. Yeah, let's go to Vietnam all of a sudden. That came out of left field. It was amazing.
I like how Vietnam looks a lot like Metro Parks.
The Viet Metro.
It doesn't seem to age well, yeah.
I loved how they took how Father Stewart, too. Like, they didn't attempt to make him younger at all. They just put a blonde wig on him and, like, slapped the helmet on his head.
I mean, let's be honest. If you had to put insert VX effect here, you probably didn't have the money for a de-aging shot there to make him look younger. I said they spent the entire effects budget on the contacts in the first scene when he becomes a raptor.
They had the money to blow up his wife. Except it was really just throwing red paint on his face.
I think the best line in the movie was after his wife gets blown up. They're like, oh, there's anything we can do for her now. She's too far gone.
Okay, so you guys looked up enough to know that what the budget and stuff and the backstory on this, where are we sitting with any development news on a Velocipaster 2?
It's coming.
That's coming out.
That's it's coming, actually.
It's confirmed.
Scott just sent out a message last night.
Oh, my God.
Part 2 is coming.
This are is a thing. Serious?
It's going to be another Sharknado, dude. It's going to be another one of those movies that are so awful, but people love it because it's awful. And it's going to, like, it's going to get a whole big cult following, and it's going to lead to stuff that it's going to lead to, like, a bunch of really great, super cheesy horror films, you know?
Like Tremors.
My only concern with that, though, is that if it starts getting more money, I don't want it to make, we really don't want them to make money because then they'll have to have a budget for effects.
Well, wouldn't that be a great stipulation if they were like, do whatever you want, but you have 35 grand, do it.
Yeah.
So when I'm recruited, like, you know, a big named actor or actress, they have to do it for like free, basically, you know?
Pro bono. And then, like, the dinosaur, because I could see, like, the pastor suit, the dinosaur suit, like, having tears in it, but they're like, we can't afford to fix it, man. Just go away.
Actually, I have a suggestion for the dinosaur suit.
Just film it from the other side that's not messed up.
I think for the next movie, they should buy a replica of the Gorn suit from Star Trek, the original series, and have the Velociraptor be the Gorn.
Dude. I'm telling you
can have a T-Rex suit.
In that very first scene where he turns into the Velociraptor and you just see the head come out of nowhere to attack the guy who's trying to mug her. And I realized how ridiculous that suit was, I almost peed myself. Like, I was laughing so hard, dude, because, like, it's so obvious a stuffed freaking animal, dude. Like, it's so obvious. And that's what made me so happy, because I'm like, dude, they didn't even attempt to make this look real. It's like literally a guy in a blow-up freaking dinosaur costume. Like,
I didn't undersell it, did I? I told you exactly what you were going to see.
Oh, perfect.
The end fight's amazing because it's just him in a rubber dinosaur suit going after ninjas.
But, you know, I have to give him credit. I have to give him spine credit for the final fight scene.
Right.
The final fight scene that you're willing to don that suit and fight ninjas in broad daylight in front of a camera and not think, well, because most people would be like, I'm not doing that. That's too obvious. Can we try to hide it? No. This is our money shot right here.
Yeah. Well, I figured, I did look it up and I did find the cost of this. They had $35,000 and that was it.
Wow.
He got the money from one of his mom's friends.
Hey, man. You know what? Kevin Smith made Clerks for $27,000, but that was in 1994. So, like, you know, you got to give these guys credit because a $35,000 budget in 2019 or 2020, whenever they made, probably 2018 or 2019, is ridiculous. Like,
they were pretty creative about things. Like, they did the first scene where they're in the church, and to not realize that it's an empty church, they put the camera on the ground and just panned it up at the one guy at the edge of the pew.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
But then they blew it.
I will be honest, the one pan shot of the church was also a very interesting jerk.
Yeah, there were some editing faux pas in there.
That's what I was going to say. They zoomed in on a part of the door, then moved it to another part, zoomed out, moved to another part. It's like, wow, that's a very well-constructed door.
Okay, so one of the more subtle jokes I found, and I'll move into something else, in the whole montage scene where he's falling in love with the prostitute, I love that in every single scene almost, they find a way to pan on him and her, and then pan up to Jesus looking anguished that his priest is betraying him for the flesh. It's almost like he's watching, it's like Jesus is the bride, or the husband that's watching on as the priest cheats on him, because the priest is supposed to be married to Jesus. And then what amazed me though was, so they really, like, it was a low budget film, but I thought the way that they montaged together the love scene was pretty classy and tasteful, if it went really long, but it was an interesting way to show a sex scene without showing a sex scene.
Yeah, I thought too that, like, the montage scenes, I said to Stormy while we were watching, I'm like, whoever is filming this, I think would make spectacular music videos. Because, like, the montage scenes were on point. You know what I mean? Like, the music was great. Like, the way they timed the scene changes and everything with the beats of the music. I was like, wow, whoever did this actually has, like, would make excellent music videos for sure. Like, the montage scenes were great. The soundtrack, I thought, was fantastic, too. I was like, this is awesome.
There were things in this movie that were really well done. Yeah, insane to say that.
Of glimpse. Yeah, you could see a glimpse of, like, oh yeah, someone could definitely become a good director. Someone could become a good, you know, editor.
Yeah.
Glimpses in between the blow-up suit of a dinosaur.
Well, and the overacting of the pastor.
Oh, yeah. So overly acted. But I in the beginning, I was like, this guy is awful. But then as it went on, I think he was making the choice to overact it that hard. You know what I mean? Like, I think he did it on purpose. You know what I mean? Like, to be ridiculous. Like, I think they wanted it to be ridiculous. That was what they were shooting for.
Yeah, it was like, you know, channel William Shatner, but a parody of William Shatner in your overacting level.
Right, exactly.
It almost felt like, though, they were starting off serious, though, at the very beginning. And then somewhere in the middle, they were like, you know what? This is a wash. Just, we're going to take a bath on this.
I don't know. I feel like the seriousness of the situation went away when they panned up into the tree to nothing. And they, you know.
But that seems to me like someone who is really just trying to earn their chops. And it doesn't occur to them that that was a bad idea.
Hey, even though the writer, director, and producer, and editor, and all of it said, don't look for a deep meaning in this, you're on a fool's errand, I did my thing, and I think I found two.
Good. Keep that in mind. We're going to come back to that.
Okay. Oh, admittedly, you have found meaning out of everything. You found meaning in Star Crash, and you also found meaning on Armageddon. So
no, there was actually one where we didn't find meaning. What was it? The one where Scott was actually like, I've got nothing.
Was it the Wandering Earth?
No.
It was one of something I picked, and you just said, I give up. I could not find meaning.
I wished it were 2012, but the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. But I don't know.
That was a terrible film.
Oh, I didn't even think of an intro for that film. I just said it sucked. It wasn't even worth my effort. I mean, the trailer alone made me not want to see it, and then I saw it. And then the worst part with that movie, when you pause it for a minute and realize there's 2.5 more hours left.
Yeah.
How did they drag this out?
I felt that way during Batman v Superman.
Yeah, well, I saw that in the theater, so I was still, like, gearing up, like, well, maybe there's something better later. With 2012, after 20 minutes, you're just like, all right, I'm done. I don't know where they're going to take this. The molecular structure of the Earth is just falling apart for no reason.
Exactly right.
No, sounds like the core.
They became sentient. The sentient quarks or whatever.
Oh, that's right. The mutating subatomic particles.
Yeah.
Right.
Particles. What? Someone did not do their science well.
The non-biological thing that biologically mutated.
Hey, which was the movie that had the countdown clock and when it... Geostorm.
Geostorm.
It was Geostorm I couldn't find a meaning in.
Oh, that was it. Yeah.
I have not seen that movie yet.
That was the one I said was worse than Star Crash, too.
Wow.
You know what? Yeah. We didn't review this movie, but the, what was it? The Core?
Oh, yeah.
We were going to do that movie, and I found out a friend of mine gave me an article that was talking about how, as bad as that movie was, you should have seen the original script.
Really?
The guy who rewrote it said... Yeah, they wanted to find a civilization of dinosaurs in the Core.
What?
That was part of the original script. And so the guy who rewrote it was like sent out an article pleading with people going, you don't understand. I actually improved it.
Come on, we all know it's mole people.
Albeit though, I still enjoyed that movie just because it's a popcorn flick for me. You know what I mean? It's one of those movies that can be on and I can have it on in the background and not care about it. You know what I mean? Like, but I enjoyed The Core. Like, I thought it was a fun action ride. You know what I mean? Was it a good movie? Absolutely not. Was it, you know, god awful and absolutely horrible? I don't agree with that. I think it was enjoyable. I don't know. Maybe it's just because what was his name? It's in that Aaron Eckhart.
I don't know.
I think he's the lead in that movie. Aaron Eckhart, I think he is.
Yeah, it's Aaron Eckhart. The guy played Two-Face.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Unfortunately, we decided instead of reviewing The Core, which would have been a good one, to review Geostorm.
No, Geostorm was an awesome choice because we were able to just completely destroy a terrible movie.
We all came in on the same page on that one.
Yeah, I think it was 2012 that we chose, and I regret everything. I don't think you could pay me. Well, you would have to pay me a lot to see that, to sit down in that movie again.
Wow. That says a lot. That says a lot, you know?
So, and especially considering I sat through VelociPastor and loved every minute of it.
Exactly.
But you know why you're watching VelociPastor. You're not, listen, when the description is a priest learns after his parents die that he has the power to turn into a dinosaur and is convinced by a prostitute to use it to fight crime and ninjas. If you're expecting anything approaching high art, you're an idiot. You know what this is going to be. And I also don't understand how anyone who sees that description of a film doesn't go, yes, I've got to watch this.
I mean, I don't want to talk to those people. They're You know, I was thinking, watching that movie, this thing is obviously, like, you know, it's, like I said, self-aware, but there's some things that are timely that when you're watching it back when it comes out, you think this is really awesome, and it takes some distance. There's a Twitter account called Silver Age Television, and they just show snippets of old stuff, Underoos commercials, stuff like that. And they had the what would be the second opening for TJ Hooker, which would have been like the mid 80s or whenever that was. And there's this great shot of, like, Shatner did it a lot, where before he would shoot the bad guy, he'd have to, like, roll on the ground, like he'd have to do a somersault, which is stupid. Like, but you know, when they shot that, they were like, nailed it again, Shatner, you did a good job. Like, nobody would dare do that nowadays. But back then, it was almost expected, you know?
Well, that's why, thanks to stuff like that, we now had the game Shatner, where you point at someone and say, Shatner! And whatever action they do next has to be given with full dramatic Shatner effect.
Captain's log, stardate 14312. I must drink this bottle of water to stay hydrated.
You have to do it to your date before she orders at a nice restaurant.
Yeah, and Scott, that wasn't active enough. That was just a simple drink. I mean, we need, like, roll, like, you need that roll on the ground or something, you know?
My favorite Shatner moment is still in Whom the Gods Destroy, when you've got Shatner playing a criminally insane person who has taken over Captain Kirk's body. And when his plan fails, he starts, like, hulking up with his fists and then starts slamming them on the computer console and then drops to his knees on the floor screaming, no, 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 punching the floor with his fists. It is highest form of Shatner overacting you will ever find.
Bob, I think you should start delivering weight benches as William Shatner. I think that would probably help.
We had an idea, and we didn't get it, but I think we're still going to do it one day. Mark, what was it? I was going to buy the Gorn suit from Arena.
Oh, yeah.
And we were fight you. Yeah. I'd have to get you, like, a Captain Kirk shirt, and I'd get the Gorn suit, and we can fight and film it. There it is. Mark's found it.
Yeah. Here we go. You sickies, you can hear this. You can hear it.
Oh, it's freezing up.
I think it's actually better this way.
I think it is. It's
amazing.
It is.
That
was season 3 when everybody knew the show was canceled and might have just given up, but
that's one thing that I wanted to ask you guys. Did anybody, have you guys watched any of the Picard series on CBS?
I'm about 6 episodes in. Amazingly, I haven't watched it all. I've got to watch the final run of it. I'm very mixed on it. It's Scott, good TV.
You were going to do a quick rant about it.
Yeah, and then I just decided it might fit more into a regular Sci-Fi Malady podcast. But, you know, my problem with it is that it's really good TV by today's standards. And it is. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's also Star Trek The Next Generation. It's a spinoff of that. And we got real problems with it because the first episode is talking about income inequality in the Federation, which has no money. What? It's a cashless economy. And it's a post-scarcity economy. And they have a whole discussion with Picard and Rafi, where she's living in a mobile home out in the desert, and she tells him, yeah, things are a lot easier in your big cushy mansion that you have. You know, things aren't as good for me. I mean, there's income inequality. She's addicted to substance. Like, she's an alcoholic and a user. And she finds her son at one point to basically say, I'm clean. I want another chance. And he tells her, you don't know how terrible it was to be your son. This is the Federation where you don't have addiction. We've moved beyond all of this. We've moved beyond drug addiction. We've moved beyond income inequality. And it gets worse. The Federation is xenophobic. They outlaw synthetic life. The whole Federation won't help save the Romulans after the supernova takes out their planet because Federation lives are more important than Romulan lives.
Which is dumb, by the way, because so you're saying the Romulan Star Empire isn't big enough to evacuate one planet? We need the Federation.
Apparently, the Romulan Star Empire is Romulus, Remus, and a couple moons and some asteroids in their own system. And that's kind of crazy that they're our greatest enemy. But this is what I liken it to. While it's very good television, it would be as if I went to a Ford dealership and said, hey, I want to buy the new Mustang. Load it up. Here's the model. This is the one I want. And I'm expecting them, when I go to pick it up, I'm expecting them to bring out a Ford Mustang. And they drive around the corner and give me a brand new Dodge Ram Super Cab. And I look and I say, right. I wanted a Mustang. And they say, well, yeah, but this is what we've re-envisioned the Mustang to be. The classic American sports car is now a full-duty pickup truck. But look, we put a Shelby on it. It's a Shelby Mustang. So it's really a Mustang. It's in that spirit. No, man, it's a pickup truck. And that's what you've done with this. And then you got Jean-Luc Picard quits and walks away when the Federation shuts down his relief effort. He quits and walks away into retirement. This is the guy, the problem is, this is the guy who, when he was the captain of the Enterprise, had Save Galaxy penciled in for his 10:30, and at 2:30, argue with Q and win, and Q is God.
Right.
And now he's going to quit because the Federation Council says he can't do his relief mission. Seriously? Right. A lot of it, I also feel, this is the other problem, while it's really good TV, they brought back Jerry Ryan to play 7 of 9 in an episode, and they've got Patrick Stewart to play Picard. Neither of them remember their characters. Jerry Ryan admitted it took her a long time to figure out 7 of 9, but this doesn't, other than her looking like 7 of 9, it doesn't resemble the character at all. There's way too much growth for the character for this to make sense to be her. And it's just wrong. It's just Jerry Ryan guest starring as Jerry Ryan in a 7 of 9 suit. And this is really more of Patrick Stewart playing Patrick Stewart rather than Patrick Stewart playing Jean-Luc Picard. It's just, it's not him. He lost the character. And I think if you go back to Nemesis, he had lost the character in Nemesis. And this is more of Nemesis Picard. And I can't fault him for that. He hasn't played the character in 26 years now, really. It's been since 1994. He did a couple of movies in the character, and as each movie went on, he lost it more and more. So,
but you gave Ian McDiarmid a good pass for Rise of Skywalker.
I think he played the Emperor just fine.
I'm just saying it can be done.
Yeah, he didn't lose the character.
I think Patrick Stewart willingly didn't want to do it because he even said in interviews, I don't feel like doing this again unless it's something totally different.
Right. And it's just, it's not him. The strength and the fire and the righteous indignity that Picard always had. He always had a way of being just holier than you and indignant about the fact that you couldn't. But at the same time, Picard passed it off in a way after season one where he wasn't like, you didn't hate him for it. It was a righteous morality that you aspired to be yourself, and you applauded him when he was righteously indignant at people who were morally bankrupt. And this
so
one,
you were just more like upset with yourself that you couldn't attain that.
Yeah, and in this movie or in this series, you catch glimpses of Picard being righteously indignant, but it comes across as a weak old man screaming to get off my lawn at people. And it's good TV. It's really good TV, but it's not what you expect.
I haven't watched it yet. I just was curious what you guys' thoughts were, because like I noticed that like because of the lockdown, Roku hooked up with a bunch of these companies, and like, you know, like they're all doing like 30-day or greater free trials on other streaming services. So we recently signed up for CBS All Access, which gives me Star Trek Discovery, gives me all the Star Trek stuff.
I would watch it, Trent, because even Discovery is good TV. Just don't expect it to be what you're expecting from Star Trek. Even Deep Space Nine, which was the darker side of humanity, still basically showed you human beings being good. This one turns everything on its head. Humanity didn't start the Federation and wipe out poverty and disease and crime and addiction and racism and bigotry because we got better and evolved. And once we realized to rise above that stupidity, there was nothing we couldn't accomplish. It's the reverse. We achieved all of those things because we became a post-scarcity society. And as soon as it becomes tough again, we reverted back to being ignorant, racist, bigoted, greedy, selfish pieces of crap. So it takes the whole message of Star Trek, which is if we just get above all of our petty divisiveness, we can accomplish the most amazing things, and even the stars are not beyond our limits. And it says, no, we're still horrible, and the only reason we ever get better is because we eliminate scarcity and struggle. It really just spits in the face of everything. And what really makes me upset is now more than ever, we need that show. Now more than ever, we need something to say we are capable of being better as humans. Things don't have to be better for us to be better. We can be better just because we can be better. We need that message. But now Star Trek has just said no.
But do you think that the reason that they took this path is because of the fact that the world has become so cynical that a show that shows that in the manner of what Star Trek, The Next Generation and that, and Star Trek used to be, which was about this perfect euphoric society, the world is so cynical with people working multiple jobs to pay their bills and all that kind of stuff that there's no way it wouldn't have the same aspirational effect. It's almost like they had to make it more like things are today to get people kind of to make people feel more at home with the show, maybe, is what I'm trying to say.
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know, because in the 1960s, you were coming out of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and it's the Cold War, and then you've got Vietnam, and then you move into the 70s when it got more popular. You got into Watergate in the 80s. You know, I mean, Star Trek was always the outlier. I think they took this path because I think it's very easy to write a dystopia. Writing a dystopia is easy because we live in a dystopia. And you can just channel reality. Writing a utopia is tough. Writers always complained and complained and complained about writing within Gene Roddenberry's constraints, because it's hard to write a utopia where people are good. And there's no, they said, how do you write drama if you can't write conflict? And so you had to get really creative as a writer. And I think the reason they're doing this is these writers know how to write dystopia. They know how to write conflict, and there's no one telling them you can't write conflict and write about a utopia. It's a lot harder to write a believable utopia and create interesting stories in a utopia than it is to write dystopian sci-fi.
You know what, Trent? Let me put it this way. Don't go work for a Japanese restaurant if you don't want to make sushi and your argument is that people don't like Japanese food around here.
Right.
Because that's basically the central problem with Kurtzman and all those guys is, well, that's not what's selling right now. Well, then don't write Star Trek. Right. Make something else. Go work on the Expanse. Go do that. Mm-hmm. Scott said it. If you don't want to play in the sandbox, don't go in the sandbox.
Right. No, I agree with you.
Japanese food, don't work at a Japanese restaurant.
I'm not excusing what they did. I just was curious on your guys' thoughts on if that's the reason they went there. I do agree with you that dystopia is a lot easier to write than Euphoria by far. I don't know. I think also that, you know, 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, you know, the world was a lot less cynical than it is now. I think people look at things now and they're like, that's all a bunch of BS. I think they're like, there's no way the world can ever be like this. This is complete crap. When I was a kid and watched Star Trek The Next Generation, it was like, I believed the future would land there. If I was a kid now and saw Star Trek Next Generation, I'd be like, that's complete garbage. There's no way these people will ever land where the show is trying to, what the show is trying to portray. Like, that's all I was trying to wonder.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I also think it's almost impossible to do what you did with TOS and Next Generation and Voyager and DS9 and Enterprise in the serialized concept that TV is. It was meant to be an episodic show. When you create a serial, you have to have drama and conflict running through all of it. And it you know, it's hard to do that over a 10 or 12 episode arc, where it's pretty easy to do that over one episode. But I also think you got to blame Patrick Stewart for some of it too, because he's the one who came in and said, it's under these circumstances, I'll do the show. And he's the one who wanted to do something totally different from what we saw in Next Generation. And he's the one that said, let's do this show from the standpoint of maybe what the Federation portrayed to everybody wasn't true, and why aren't we questioning the truth of the Federation at the highest levels? So he's the one who basically said, in a commentary about Trump and Brexit, where he said, we need to question the reality of this so-called utopia of the Star Trek universe. So he's the one who wanted to go in and explore the fact that it was all BS. Conveniently, having his character is the only one who maintained the heightened humanity aspect.
Scott, you said that people don't want that kind of Star Trek episodic hope for the future. Then why is the Orville doing well? I can tell you why I don't watch it, but my reason is extraordinarily partial, and I'll admit that.
The Orville is filling a void. I actually think if people went back to episodic feel-good television like Firefly or like Star Trek The Next Generation or any other Star Trek series, I think you'd see people flock to it because everything is a serial right now. I would love to be able to watch a show that I don't have to watch every single episode to watch the next episode. It'd be really nice to just be able to plop in and say, oh, hey, let's watch this episode. But everyone's afraid to do that. Everyone is terrified to be a trendsetter. And serialization right now is the way of TV. That and randomly killing off main characters to surprise the audience is the way of TV.
But it's about, not surprising anymore.
No, and it's about gut punching the audience. And you know, I really feel that when the look at the flowers moment with Carol was or the Red Wedding was about the height of gut punch the audience. After that, I don't know what else you can do. Carol looked at a 10-year-old kid and said, look at the flowers, Lizzie, and then shot her in the head. I don't know how you get beyond the look at the flowers moment.
Right.
Yeah. Or the Red Wedding, where they stab a pregnant woman in the womb with a sword.
Yeah, where they killed the entire cast of characters you've been in love with for the last three seasons. You know what I mean? Like, and they just murder them. Like, oh, they're gone.
Well, I'll say even in the books, I thought the Red Wedding was the downturn of Game of Thrones. And I mean, listen, man, if George R.R. Martin walks out in public right now, I understand everyone throwing rotten fruit at him. King Bran?
I think Bob already wants to murder him just because he hasn't finished the book yet, you know?
Right.
Bran's arc was turning into a tree.
I was about to say.
Now, see, I like when you guys were talking about The Expanse and you mentioned how the books were done like 10 years ago. And Bob's like, what? You can finish a book series? I didn't know that. I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah, you know, since you brought up The Expanse, speaking of that, have you guys been watching that at all?
No, I got to, you know what, that's on my list. I know it's out, and I know there's a scene where they're checking out the reactor and all the internal parts, and a friend of mine, he's worked at NASA, he's now at Lockheed Martin, he studied that stuff, rocket science, and he said, yeah, that's actually pretty close. There's some fictional elements, and there should be, but actually it's pretty spot on.
Which is really funny because the writers... we're just waiting and pausing and waiting. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's a really spectacular show, man. Like, I started to watch it. The first season takes a while to get into. It took me probably 5-6 episodes because it's literally following like three story arcs, and it takes a little bit for them to convalesce into one thing. And then once that happens, it just starts getting weirder and weirder and weirder until you're like, what is going, like, this is insane. Like, it gets really good, man. Like, I fell in love with it and plowed through all four seasons, like over a 2-week period. Like, I was, you know, I'm an old guy, dude. I need my sleep. I was staying up till 3-4 in the morning watching this crap. You know, like, I can't stop. I have to keep watching.
So has anybody read the books for The Expanse?
I have not, but they're on my list of things to read.
Anybody?
No.
On my list.
Okay, so I'll say this. I've read most of the books, and then I stopped. And I'll say that where we're at right now in season 4, I think the story it falls off in quality after this point.
Yeah.
The books are really good through about the 4th or 5th book. And then they start falling off in quality because they jump ahead like 30 years at one point. They jump 30 years ahead. And at that point, to me, it just started to become less interesting. But the first two or three books are the best to me. And then after you get past where they get through the ring, it goes downhill for me from there. But yeah, it's still, like, it's never bad, but it just, it, I have no desire to finish off the series at this point. It's kind of like, yeah, Game of Thrones.
I don't want to spoil the show for anybody, so I won't go into any detail, but like the way season four ended, I was very disappointed because I was like, you did all these things and then this is how we're going to leave this off. Like, really? This is the direction we're going for the next season of the story. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm definitely going to buy the books, especially since we're in lockdown. Give me something to read, you know, but I was just curious if you guys watch that show or not.
No, it's on my list. Speaking of weird stuff, let's get to some, let's bring it back around the Velocipastor. Weirdest, yes. in your mind, weirdest part of the movie. We're going to go through like a best of weirdest part for you. And I think for me, it's actually the scene at the beginning where the two priests are sitting down and one of them just keeps pouring them wine going, here, have some more wine. To help get over the death of his parents. He's just like, have some more wine. And you know, it's the sacramental kind.
I found the weirdest part for me was when he gets back from China and realizes what he can do. And he tries to tell Father Stewart about it. And he's having the fever dreams. And Father Stewart leans in and kind of hugs him and gives him this weird, awkward kiss on the forehead. Like, there was just, it was just so bizarre for me. Like, the way that whole scene was filmed, it was just very weird. Like, yes. Very weird.
I got to pick another one. Too,
like, the dialogue where he tells him, like, I forget how he says it, but it's a clever bit of dialogue where he's like, if you want to find God, you got to go where you don't think he'll follow you.
China.
Right. Yeah.
I got to find another one now. So I'm going to say it's the get in shape montage scene where he's doing all the exercises in the 1981 Nutters.
Because it has nothing to do with anything.
Right. It's like, hey, look at how in shape I am as an actor.
Well, what I thought was great, too, is they go through that whole montage sequence, which basically just shows him like lifting weights and like her like basically coaching him. And then suddenly after the sex scene, when the ninjas drop in through the window, she suddenly knows how to like kung fu everybody in the room. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, all of a sudden they're all already like martial artists. That's freaking fantastic. You know?
That's actually my favorite scene is when they break in. It's like, but you wake up from your first time together, and next thing you know, you're fighting ninjas in the morning. First thing in the morning, you fight ninjas.
And you have to do it in your tighty whities.
Yes. Yeah. And you're experts at it. Like, what?
And then the passionate kiss afterward. That was
right. I loved also how like nonchalant the tumble into the room was. It was just like it was like a ninja randomly walked by the room and just went woo and like jumped. Like oh, and the most awkward post-coital cuddle scene in the history of the universe, dude. Like he's all curled up in the fetal position and like it just looked weird.
I also go on, Bob.
Worst part for me has got to be the China scene where they're there. I'm like, I just could not get past it.
which part of the China scene?
China. Are you hurt?
Oh, Right, like when he first meets the dragon lady or dragon warrior. Are you hurt? No, I have a giant arrow protruding from my chest, bleeding profusely, but I'm fine. Like,
then that weird jump cut from him with the talon in his hand, and then wham, he's back at the rector or wherever with the priest, you know.
How was China? That was like Metro Parks. Well,
I also didn't quite get that China really is East. Like what? Like, what did that line actually mean? Honestly, the you know, the China looked like backwoods Ohio. It looked like where I grew up in Holmes County.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, because those were all Native American trees. I don't know.
Those were all Native American trees. I looked at them like, going, they didn't go anywhere.
I don't remember seeing evergreens in China too often.
They were in somebody's backyard for most of the movie. Like, there was a church used, a street corner, and some guy's backyard. That was the extent of the set location.
And someone's apartment.
Yeah, that's true. There was, well, I don't know if that was an apartment or was that like a pool house. Whoever's backyard they were in probably had like a pool house that they used as the apartment.
I mean, you got a $35,000 budget. You don't have a lot of room for location shoots.
Exactly, man. You know, like I said, Kevin Smith took $27,000 and he had a single camera that never left a convenience store except for what, three scenes? Like,
yeah, but that was it. There was no effects to speak of.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like,
so
you gotta admit that was the ninth apartment I've ever seen a hooker live in.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, she was studying to be a doctor and a lawyer, so She needs a nice place to get her studies done. Wait a minute. What was up with the pimp?
What was his name? Zimmerman? Oh, that guy.
The Ron Jeremy guy? The one that looks like Ron Jeremy?
Yeah.
This line about the girl, if you stuff dicks in your mouth the way you did that sandwich, I'd be a millionaire.
Oh, dude. I need to watch it again now. I'm going to actually watch that movie again at some point.
Yes!
Oh, well. What else is everybody having?
Conversation, huh?
Yeah.
So I watched an episode last night.
What'd you watch last night?
The episode of The Loop.
Oh, yeah, we did. We watched an episode of Tales from the Loop, the new sci-fi series from Amazon. It's very interesting. It's very kind of Tales from the Crypt, Outer Limits-y.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. Like, it's about this facility called MRSA that is under a town named MRSA in Ohio. And it's like this, they do these experiments and stuff, and like the whole town works their kind of thing, and there's like weird, it's just weird. It's Black Mirror. It's basically, it's an American version of Black Mirror.
It was really good, though. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It was really cool. It's got an interest. I really like it when films, I love that like 1970s, like when people purposely make something look dated. So like it looks like it was filmed in the 70s, even though it was filmed now. So did a great job of like kind of the graininess to the film, and like just all the set design and everything was really great. Like, it was cool, man. Tales from the Loop. We only watched one episode so far, but it was cool. I dug it.
Yeah.
Definitely put that.
And let's face it, if something like that's gonna happen, it's gonna happen in Ohio. That is believable.
Yeah,
probably. All right, then what's your favorite scene from Velocipaster?
Ooh, favorite scene.
I would say mine is the fight at the end. Hands down, best scene, the fight with him fighting ninjas, but also his brother who, that angle just jarred in at the end there. I was your brother, ignored the whole time. And of course, the poison that stopped him from being the dinosaur, except it didn't get my hand.
Right. I think my hand is immune. That was the line.
Yeah, that's the line. That would be my favorite part.
The scene for me that packed the most hilarity was definitely the end fight scene. But for me, as far as like a piece of film, I have to kind of agree with Scott talked about earlier with the love scene. I thought the love scene was really well put together. I enjoyed it, man, with like the 1970s, you know, Ang Lee Hulk freaking gridded screen and everything, and the music going on, the whole love montage. I thought it was fantastic. I loved that part.
This is going to be weird, but my favorite part was at the beginning when he's talking to... It's carrying on from when they're running through the woods and she's trying to convince him to use his power, and he's wearing her dress. And he's saying, this is the most priestly thing you've ever done. And then he goes to talk to the priest, and he goes, I can stop all these bad people. And the one guy, the other father goes, I don't think God wants people to die. And he says, oh, I think God wants people to die. I think God wants a lot of people to die. I don't know why I think that whole exchange is my favorite part of the movie.
You know what? I got to take it back. My favorite scene is the car burning, or the car that should be burning.
Yeah.
It says insert burning car.
VFX. For no apologies. They're just throwing it out there early to let you know what you're in for. That's my favorite. Yeah.
It really just looks like they really meant to, but then they ran out of money and they're like, just leave it there. Just, they can use their imaginations.
Because it's like this pivotal scene for him, but they didn't even include it, you know?
It kind of reminds me of like Ed Wood, like him just going, you know, that's great because people could just use their imaginations on that part.
Right.
A Star Trek Voyager once had a scene where they supposedly had a juggler entertaining the people in the crew lounge. They never showed the juggler. They just showed people reacting to a juggler that wasn't there. You had the budget to get a juggler, and you just had the juggling going on off screen.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, man. I also really like the over-exaggerated eyebrows and Fu Manchu on the mannequin head at the end that gets ripped off the main bad guy.
Oh my gosh, that was
so overtly bad, like with the big V-shaped freaking eyebrows. I was like, that's awesome. That just made me happy.
How about the scene at the end where the prostitute is at the hospital getting fixed up, and he's like, you ready to go back and see her? She's not in a hospital bed or a room. They had like a doctor's office they could use, and she's on like an examination table. Like she went in to get checked for the flu.
And then it says, she's fine. And then it just says, she's fine in case you weren't sure.
And then a quote from Gandhi. Like, what? I don't know. To the guys who made Velocipastor, if you ever happen to listen to this episode, you get my two thumbs up, man.
My apologies to anyone who came here interested in it, but we've spoiled the whole movie for you.
I've got a sneak peek on the plot of Velocipastor 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's his struggle against AIDS that he picked up from the prostitute. Too far, over the top, insensitive. Should I edit that out?
No, I think it's fantastic.
It's Velocipastor 2 into the Velocipastorverse.
See, Scott, I thought you were actually serious for a minute.
That's what makes it good.
Honestly, when the ending came around and the hooker got cut and fell to the ground, I thought something was going to happen to where she was going to turn into a velociraptor also. I was like, you know, he's going to hand her the tooth or something, and she's also going to turn into this dragon warrior, and they're going to have two rubber suits kicking the crap out of ninjas, which would have been awesome.
Might have been in the script, but it wasn't in the budget.
Velociraptor sex.
Oh, no.
That leads it open to Velociraptor babies.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
The Velocitoddler. You thought the terrible twos were bad for human babies.
Oh, dear Lord.
You know, don't worry about giving spoilers away. The general rule of thumb on Sci-Fi Malady is spoilers. That's
it. It's just not our fault you haven't watched it.
Spoiler. If you don't like spoilers, then why are you listening to a review?
Exactly. Yeah.
Besides, we never review a topical film anyway. Like, we're always like 5 years in the past.
Right.
Except for this one.
Yeah, we're only 2 years or a year in the past, but whatever.
Whatever. Well, does anybody else got a favorite part before we get into Scott's deep meanings? I can't wait to hear these.
Yeah,
they're great. I love what Scott took from it. But sorry, go ahead.
as you said, I think I love the part where the priest is slowly going down the path and the hooker finds. Because, I mean,
oh, no.
she's in there getting communion, and like he's slowly going down the path towards evil and he's coming up. It's like going, they meet on halfway.
Yeah, she kind of finds God in the process. Like, I don't, yeah.
There's deep meaning.
Got the theme music, Mark?
Oh, yeah. You ready?
Ready.
Okay.
This is Scott's deep meaning.
It's like deep thoughts with Jack Handy from SNL. So,
yeah, that's the idea.
I know that the writer doesn't have this, but here's what I take out of this. The world is a crap place, and there's a ton of evil in the world because the nature of humanity is evil. And while the film at the end says the only way to get to peace is to eliminate all violence, I think what the film is trying to tell you is that the only way to eliminate all violence is to embrace your inner velociraptor. And that if you become in tune with your evil side, your dark side, your baser human natures, you can channel that into a transformation that will make you a righteous warrior on the side of good. Even though you're eviscerating people and eating them and ripping them limb from limb, if you're fighting crime by using your evil nature, you can bring about a better good. And your second meaning is, I'm going to mail this one in. God wants people to die. He wants the bad people to die, and that's why he gives you powers to channel. No, that one's done. It's just the one. Channel your inner nature and your inner demons and your inner base instincts, and by becoming and using that evil for good, you can eliminate evil and violence and bring about a good world. So you get to Gandhi's perfect good world by being violent and evil.
So essentially, Frank Castle, the Punisher.
Yes.
Essentially, Velocipaster is basically a reimagining of the Punisher. That's what you're saying.
I mean, it's awesome.
Whoa. I agree.
It's not my best deep meaning, but, you know, it's the Velocipaster that admittedly has nothing in it.
That was Scott's load of bullcrap.
Oh dear Lord.
I mean, I could have went with, if you want to get people to be good, then you got to get them all addicted to cocaine so they seek out a self-help group.
But that's exactly what the movie was about, so that can't be deep meaning.
So let's, you know what, I hope the creator of Velocipaster hears this, because we gotta rate it. I guess we'll give it out of four claws.
Five.
How many claws does a past Velociraptor have?
I don't know, three?
See, three on each paw, and then there's that one central one, so it's like four. Yeah.
All right, so eight. How many Velociraptor claws?
Hold on. We always rate it out of 10. We can't just go to eight out of nowhere, so... What we did.
It's biologically anatomically correct.
Fine.
technically, there are 10 claws somewhere in between all the appendages of the Velociraptor.
Well, if you're going to go that route. Right. Fine, Scott. We'll do an even 10. We'll just say it lost two of them.
All right, I'll kick us off. I always try to rate a movie as for what it was intended to be and not any other standard. And for what this was intended to be, slapstick, low-budget, self-aware, laugh-at-ourselves horror comedy, this gets 10 Raptor Claws out of 10. It just, this is amazing, and it knows what it was. It was self-aware, and this is to me, this is the height of that low budget, laugh at ourselves, make something comical genre of horror comedy.
Well done. I would have to turn around and I will give it an 8 out of 10 claws. And I took two claws off of it because there were some really fundamental bad filmmaking moments that were outside of what was intended. You know, like we discussed, the, you know, the shakiness in the pan out and a couple of really bad swipes left and right that could have been caught in editing. So it took two claws off for that. Otherwise, it's an 8 out of 10 for me.
Nick.
So, I would give it, and I don't like movies like that. I give it a 5 out of 10 claws, and that's only because that dude's got a fucking balls to put out a movie.
I'm going to give it 9 out of 10 claws just because the blood scene in there where he gets splashed after he kills his brother. I'm like, that was just water that was red. I'm like, nah.
It was kind of obviously tomato soup.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to give this 10 claws out of 10 claws.
Yes, Kurt.
Only because this movie shouldn't happen. You shouldn't be able to make a movie on $35,000. You shouldn't be able to accomplish this. You know, there's so many things in life that come off the blocks and they end up managing to finish it. But you can see this, what gets going, and there's some momentum behind it. And then there's this big moment where somebody comes in and saves the day. And so his mom's friend's money to put towards this, that shouldn't even and have ended up even with that, with a completed film, but they did it. It's against all odds that this thing even exists. And I love it. I really, truly do.
I have to think I give it 9 out of 10. Again, the only thing that really subtract from it, I know it's a B-rated film, but I like it. It accepts what it is, and I accept it. Just some of the fundamental shakiness of the cameras once in a while, and something takes me out of it, but even sometimes that adds to it. So 9 out of 10 for me.
I'm giving it a 10 because I love messes like this. This is not pretentious. It's knows what it is. It knows what it's doing. And it's kind of like if you took Quentin Tarantino and said, this is a move, take one of your movies, but you're only getting $35,000. This is what he'd make.
Didn't we see that with From Dusk Till Dawn?
What's that?
Didn't we see that with From Dusk Till Dawn?
He had more than $35,000 on that. But basically, I mean, I'm just saying, if you took Tarantino and said, you're only getting $50,000, man, he'd be like, oh, I could do that. Don't worry about it. I could work with that. And he would make something like this.
He spent more than $50,000 in the blood for Kill Bill.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, you can't even get Cheech to be in a movie for $35,000.
He's got the best line. What were they? Bleeping psychos? On, no. Psychos do not explode when the sunlight hits them.
I don't give a shit how crazy they are. Yeah, I love that line.
Kurt, I have to disagree. If you gave Quentin Tarantino $35,000 to make a movie, I think it would be full of huge actors because anybody will jump at the opportunity to act in a Quentin Tarantino film. You know what I mean? Like they really will.
A cameo.
Yeah. There's a great documentary out there called QT8 that is about Quentin Tarantino and his films that he's made. And they discuss it in there. And there's several actors that are like literally if Quentin calls, like, I don't care, don't pay me. I'll come be in the movie. You know what I mean? Because they're just like being in one of his films is so ridiculous. Who was it? The guy who played in Jackie Brown?
Sam Jackson?
Not Sam Jackson. Yeah, Robert Forrester. He said he was literally like done with acting. And Quentin's like, no, I want to put you in this. He's like, Robert Forrester's like, the studio's never going to let you do that. He's like, I tell the studio what I'm doing. And like, and put him back in there and like basically revitalize that guy's career as a result, you know? So little Quentin Tarantino history there. Sorry, did I?
Yeah, Robert Forrester, star of The Black Hole, one of my beloved childhood movies you can watch on Disney streaming right now. It holds up. It's funny.
Nice. So what would be our cumulative review? What is the official average for Velociraptor?
Oh, okay. I could look that up.
We had 3 tens, 2 nines, an 8, and a 5. So that is...
No, wait, Scott, say that again.
Three tens, 2 nines, an 8, and a 5.
Three tens, two nines.
Yep.
Yep.
It's 61 out of six. Out of six people? No, that can't be right. Seven?
Hang on.
One, two, three, six.
Six.
Should be seven.
Seven? Yeah, seven. Yep. Seven.
So it's just short of a nine. Or just, yeah, it's just short of a nine.
That's a nine. Like,
yeah, it'd be basically a nine. So right on, man. Congratulations, Velocibastard.
Congratulations, Brendan Steele or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's Brendan Steele or Steer or Steele, whatever.
Okay. You got our thumbs up.
Yep.
It comes out to an 8.71428571428574.
We'll round that up to nine.
Okay, Google.
That's a thumb. That's a thumbs up with the nail trimmed.
Yep, exactly. That's two claws up now. Come on.
two claws.
Mark, we got anything else?
Yeah, a couple things. Two things. One, a request. So for you, for the Lunatic Parade here, I don't know when you guys are going to record next, but you were talking about comics in one of your previous episodes. I got to weigh in, and I just don't want to do it here. So,
okay.
If you will have me, I would like to weigh in.
Absolutely. I was going to bring that up with you. I was going to bring it up with you guys because we record usually Thursday evenings. We use a program called Zoom, and I can get links out to you guys, man. You guys, all of you guys are more than welcome to join.
Awesome. Well, I know Zoom, so.
Well, that'd be great. Yeah.
Hey, where can we find you guys' stuff? Where's your websites and First Table Gaming, all of that stuff you guys are doing?
FirstTableGaming.com right now is linking to, we basically moved everything over to Medium. We're using Medium pages for everything. So you can go to FirstTableGaming.com and it'll take you to our Medium site. And then Medium.com/The Lunatic Parade will take you to our podcast episodes. Those are the two places where everything's living right now.
Awesome.
Okay.
I also want to bring up, if we can plug one more thing, if you don't mind. I'd love to plug my wife.
Go for it.
I'd love to plug my wife's business, Nerd Artistry. She makes all kinds of really cool, geeky, nerdy stuff, like, you know, with dice bags and laptop bags and all that. But she has been doing tremendous work making masks and donating them. I wanted to highlight her for a minute on that because she's just sending 200 off to a children's hospital in Philadelphia.
Oh, wow.
She sent about, I think, almost 50 up to Toledo now at this point. She's making 100 for a nursing home here in Wayne County. Like, she's been doing that. So I want to just highlight her for doing an awesome job on that. Point some stuff towards nerdartistry.com.
Thank you, Stormy. In fact, I was going to, you know, I was listening to you talk about your dice bags the last, one of the previous episodes. I got to check those out.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. Like, my new ones, like, it's funny because we do a show and we get a new list of what people use them for. So my newest model, they have like a belt loop or a carrying thing. They're really awesome.
Oh,
I like them.
Yeah, we found out at the February Odd Mall that people bought them to use them as chalk bags for rock climbers. She's really? Like, yeah, she's like, you just need to put a belt loop on it. So they now have a belt loop on them.
Sweet.
In fact, you know what's funny? My wife is making masks too, and she just made one for Michelangelo here. Oh, wait, let me do the camera. Sorry, I turned the camera off. So this is for Michelangelo. She made that for a kid.
Nice.
Nice.
It's for a child, but this is how she just tested it. So,
right.
Well, cowabunga, dudes.
Well, listen, guys, while we're talking about masks, I got to bring in Alex Jones. And listen, Nation, they're trying to shut us down. We need your support more than ever now. The globalists is part of their agenda, and the psionic vampires have shut me down. YouTube won't let me on. They've removed me from the Apple store, removed from the Android store. But listen, You gotta buy my supplements. I've got this new toothpaste. It will cure COVID. It attacks it at point blank range. Buy my toothpaste, my super blue toothpaste. It's got stuff that you only find in supernovas. This toothpaste has ingredients that kill the COVID, and they're only in supernovas and trace amounts in blueberries. You can only buy it here because the globalist psionic vampires led by Hillary Clinton out of Comet Pizza in D.C., supported by Barack Obama's deep state, don't want you to know about this toothpaste. Buy my toothpaste, brush your teeth with it, and somehow brushing your teeth with my toothpaste will kill COVID on contact. You won't have to worry about COVID. Go out in the world and do what you gotta do. Only with me and my toothpaste that isn't supported by the psionic vampires can you survive the COVID.
You're gonna give me a heart attack. I'm done.
Buy my supplements. If you buy my supplements, you can be a middle-aged man with a keg just like me. It'll make you strong. This is my health supplement. If you want to look like me, Alex Jones, buy this overpriced crap. It's probably gonna kill you, but don't blame me. Disclaimer: toothpaste does not cure COVID or prevent it.
Not approved by FDA. Please do not sue us.
Not approved by the globalist agenda.
Oh, wow.
So the last bit of news is kind of bad news. I was talking to my neighbor. My neighbor is the one that runs Gulardi Fest, and he said good 99% chance it's canceled this year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Everything is canceled. I almost stayed in my Alex Jones voice. Everything is canceled through 2021.
Until October, and it's being held in a hotel this year, if I understood it correctly. That's all done.
That was the plan. He even put the deposit down, but the problem is he only had a handful of people so far that have expressed interest in going to, like, vendors-wise. So,
well, guests, too. They got to get those... Not big names, but that's part of the draw is who they're able to get there.
Yep. And really, only Little John was like, whatever you want to do, man. But other than that, yeah. So he's pretty sure he's going to cancel it.
Yeah. I mean, everything. People keep thinking that this thing is going to be like we're going to get to May 1st or June 1st and we're going to be back to normal. We're not getting back to normal. This is until we have a vaccine, there's going to be some form of social distancing. And then even when it is back to normal, this is unfortunately a Great Depression-like event that's going to hit the economy. It's going to be 5 to 10 years before normal reoccurs.
Yeah. Yeah, we had 10 million people in the last 2 weeks sign up for unemployment. The system is not built to handle that, you know?
Yeah. In fact, you know what, Scott and maybe Tom, you guys at the parade there, we're talking last time about doing like a politics show. And first of all, count me out. But second, Scott was doing something like that. What was it called? We Have Issues?
Yeah, We Have Issues.
Scott always has a politics-based show either happening or in the background or on hiatus or whatever.
Quick Rants was a lot of politics. It was just me ranting for 10, 12 minutes about something. And then every once in a while... I'd go on something stupid like Absidy and yell at the mother for naming your kid A, B, C, D, E.
But I'm just saying, like, that's the kind of thing that if you guys wanted to do that, Scott is already well-versed, and I don't see Thomas not signed. I don't see Thomas avoiding that if he didn't want to.
Oh, yeah, you know me. I'm more than willing to debate you on your stupid ideas.
Thomas is the Republican. I'm the moderate. We need a progressive lefty.
No, I step out because I'm bad at debate and I get worked up and it's just not the right thing for me to do.
Hence the name, the Rage Master.
So, and like, I've discovered that I'm better when I'm texting because I don't have to hear you. I don't have to look at you. I can just sit and stare at a wall and think about it. Otherwise, if I'm in a verbal debate, I'll come up with a retort to your question 2 hours after the fact.
That is true. But now we're just doing future show planning and collaboration, which I'm sure the audience doesn't want to hear. So maybe we should, don't we get out of here, Mark?
That's true. I just thought I'd pitch that out. So, you know, whatever.
Don't take offense to it. I'm just joking. I can edit all that out. So,
Oh, you're gonna?
Oh, yeah. Just okay. Transition into landing the plane, man.
I don't know. Well, keep in the part about the Goulardi Fest just because Ron did want me to announce that.
Sure.
So, okay. Otherwise, what'd you want me to do, Scott?
Land the plane.
Wait, what? Oh, toss. Right. It's been a week.
It's not like we haven't done this 144 times.
I have an old man bad brain. So, Scott, how could people supposedly contact us?
Well, you might be able to use our email address, contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com, but I don't know if that's still active because I don't know if I paid it in the last year. Or you can go to our website and leave us comments at ravinglunaticmedia.com. You can also hit us up on our inactive Instagram page at ravinglunaticmedia.com, our inactive Twitter page at Meteor Raving or at Sci-Fi Malady. But really, just leave us a comment at our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com.
And if someone wanted to contact the Lunatic Parade, what would they have to do?
You can find us, like I said, at firsttablegaming.com. That's our Medium page. You can also find us on Twitter at firsttblgaming or on Facebook at firsttblgaming.
Look at you guys having active Twitter pages.
Oh, I didn't say they were active. I just said you can find us there.
All right, Rage Master, what's left for them to do?
Wash your hands, Sidikis.